Welcome to the DuPage Vineyard Teaching Channel. Thank you for joining us.
So I may cough a little bit. Thank you for those of you guys who prayed for me this week. I was sick for, had bronchitis for a couple weeks there, and I usually get sick, and I found out being sick is a real pain. There's just nothing fun about it. Except you get to discover all kinds of new TV shows that you didn't know existed, like Duck Dynasty. It's like, really? So, I made very productive use of my sick time, as you can see. So, it's Father's Day, and we're actually finishing the series we started about a month or so ago on Mother's Day on building a healthy family in an unhealthy world. And I want to take a look specifically today at fathers and fatherhood and some of those things. And it's an interesting thing in our world because we live in a world that doesn't particularly value fathers or fatherhood. And most of the information on fathers I see out there is often ends up being a long list of what you need to do to be a good dad. You know, this is what a good dad is. As we go through this, you know, this morning, you'll have a chance. You can think, if you're a father, you can look at your own fathering, or you can look at how you were fathered or not by your dad. There's going to be stuff that applies to all, and we'll really zero in especially on God's fatherhood of us. It was interesting, you know, before the service we were praying, and I mentioned, you know, I said, so what are you talking about? I said, well, it's Father's Day, so I thought I'd hit fatherhood a little bit. And Doug said, man, I'm out of here. And I said, what do you mean? He said, man, here comes another list of all the ways things I need to do to become a good or better father. You know, I thought, well, we're really not going to do that, just so dads, you can relax. Not going to give you a to-do list, just because I don't want to give myself one, so... But we are going to talk a little bit about how God fathers and the key way that our fathering is like His, or the number one thing that we do as fathers like God. So I don't know a better way to put that. excuse me. One of the things that I want to start with is just recognizing the reality that we live in, like I said, an unhealthy world, and part of that is we get a really screwed up picture or idea of the value and importance of fathers and of fatherhood. I think, like I said, one of the ways that our world is unhealthy, if you look at the media, at TV, at the movies, you're going to have a hard time finding very many good examples of a father or of a good father. It's just not me. There's always a few dad movies that come out, you know, and you can pick a couple and say, ooh, this one shows a good dad, but they're actually pretty rare. Most of the time in the media, the examples of dads, they're either evil, you know, they're abusive or controlling or whatever, or they're absent, you know, they're just not there, either not there at all or they're absent at work all the time, or they're just kind of clueless. You know, it's a well-meaning doofus and, you know, mom or the kids have to come in and save the day because dad is clearly incompetent and doesn't know how, and dad's always then so grateful that his kids are so wonderful and amazing and wise. Now, there is some truth to that. However, this picture in the media of the complete lack of good dads sends a pretty strong message that, you know what, fathers, you don't know what you're doing, and you're not very important. The second part of that is that, you know, the trend in Hollywood, which is probably underneath some of that, is you see more and more starlets moving into becoming single moms, choosing to adopt or artificially inseminate or whatever. And there's this theme, this idea that, you know what, I can do just as good a job raising a kid as any couple can do. You know, I don't need a man. Found Jennifer Aniston was quoted about 2 months ago saying, hey, the times have changed. You don't need a man to make a baby now. I thought, really? Well, there's at least one part that we have to contribute, if nothing else, you know. But the idea there is that really... And excuse me, but dads are only needed for sperm, and beyond that, a good mom, especially if you've got millions of dollars in the bank from your movies, can really provide everything else that a kid needs. And I found myself thinking, you know, I wish someone would just step and say, you know what, that's just stupid. You know, excuse me. The other latest trend in Hollywood is that now some of the single moms, the stars, are hiring mannies. You know what a manny is? It's a male nanny because they need a masculine presence in the home for the kids. But we don't need to have a husband, and the kids don't need a father. And I find myself thinking, and the ironic thing with that is that then the culture comes along, and when a woman says she can do that, they say, oh, how brave she is, how strong she is, how, look at that way she takes on that challenge and steps up, and isn't that wonderful? And again, I find myself thinking, no, it's not. And I wish we wouldn't exalt that the way we do. And, you know, part of that is wanting to be sensitive to single moms. And, you know, it's being a single mom is tough. I've known a lot over the years. We've got some in this church who are amazing. And we want to be sensitive and not lay a burden and say, oh, you know, somehow you're not as good. But if you talk to a single mom, and I challenge you this, find one who says, boy, my kids are better off without a dad. I've never, ever had that conversation. I've had the conversation to say they're better off without that particular guy, but not without a dad at all. It makes a difference. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. There's a cost in the world of whether there's a difference it makes whether dads are present or not in the home. Right now in our country, I don't know if you realize this, 1/3 of the kids who are born do not live with their biological father. 1 out of 3 kids who are born today don't have their biological father in the home. That's tough. And the statistics are pretty brutal. The biggest indicator of your future financial success or being in poverty is whether there's a dad in the home. That's the number one thing that indicates whether poverty is in someone's future or not. When there's not a dad around, children are 2 or 3 times more likely to be poor, are more likely to be involved in drugs, have emotional or behavioral problems, engage in criminal activity, experience teen pregnancy, tend to get lower education levels and lower job status in life. It makes a difference. It makes a difference. And, you know, like I said, that's, I'm not trying to depress anybody, certainly not any of our single moms, because God can overrule that. I've seen it so often where God has provided what wasn't there on a human level. So, but that is the reality, and we need to be honest about that, because when we devalue fatherhood, when we tell dads by image or whatever else that you're not important, it's not a surprise that then dads say, hey, I'm not important, and don't put as much into being a dad. And then the quality of everything goes down with that. It matters. And Dad, specifically to you, I want to tell you this morning, it matters. Your role is critical in the family, in your future of your kids, and in society. And part of the challenge of us as men is to embrace that. Not in a way that lays guilt on ourselves, in a way that's like, oh, you know, the weight of the world is on my shoulders. No, it's actually on God's shoulders. We're good, but he's given us a very unique place in his kingdom, in his plan for the world, and that's kind of what I want to talk to you right now. Why is it that dads are so important? And as I've looked at different articles and things this week in preparation, you know, it's amazing how many lists there are of things a good dad is supposed to do. I mean, I get tired reading them, so I'm not going to even share them with you because, like, okay, this is overwhelming. I don't know anybody who does all of them. You know, I don't think it's even possible. But there's one particular thing that dads bring to the table. There's one particular way that we actually operate in our family the same way God does that is the most important thing, the thing that you've got to get a hold of. And this is, whether you're a man or a woman, this is going to be true in your life from your father or lack of father. And it's something that you pass on that you can be aware of. And that's that what dads do is name their kids. You name their kids? Wait a minute, my mom named me. Yeah, well, she might have picked the name. But when I'm biblically, when you're talking about naming someone, you're talking about giving them identity. You know, we've kind of lost a sense of that in our world today. But in biblical times, when you named a child, you were partly establishing their identity, saying, this is who you are. And if you go through, you'll see plenty of times where, you know, the mom picked the name or the dad picked the name, but there, as far as the literal legal name, but there was always a sense and understanding in Scripture that, one, that dad would have the final say. So like with John the Baptist when he was born, Elizabeth, his mom, we can put that passage up from Luke if you want, the family's debating, what are we going to call him? And they had different ideas, and they wanted to call him Zechariah, you know, after his father. His mom said, no, he's going to be called John. Because an angel had appeared to them, by the way, and said, this child is going to be called John. So mom stood up and said, you know, we think John is a good idea. And the family was like, no, no, no. So they went to Zechariah, and when Zechariah said, no, his name is John, that was it. Because the dad had that responsibility of naming the child. Now, that child grew up to be John the Baptist, and that name encapsulated his identity. And what dad's responsibility there was to establish his identity. You see the same thing in Genesis in the story of Benjamin. If you know the story, Jacob had a couple wives. The one he really loved was named Rachel. His youngest child was named Benjamin. As she was having difficulty in childbirth, this is Rachel, she passes away. As she breathed her last, when she was dying, she named her son Benoni, but his father named him Benjamin. Now, interestingly, Benoni means son of my trouble. How would you like to grow up with that name? Your mom dies giving birth to you, and your name forevermore is son of my trouble. How do you think that would shape his idea of who he was? Probably not one of those things that really builds you up and makes you feel good about your life. The name Benjamin means son of my right hand. And if you understand the right hand biblically is a position of authority, of honor. It says that Jesus is seated at the right hand of God the Father. So when Jacob came along and said, no, we're not going to name him son of my trouble. We're going to name him son of my right hand. He was giving him a whole different place. A place that Benjamin, as he goes through life, says, yeah, I'm the son of my father's right hand. That's my place. That's who I am. Completely different. And that name would determine and shape the course of his destiny. Now, not just, I want you to catch this, because when I talk about name, I'm not only talking about a literal legal name here. We need to move past that. You know, there's a lot of reasons today we pick a legal name for someone. Sometimes it's because of family history. You know, we name after our father or grandfather or someone, and, you know, a name is getting handed down through the family. Sometimes it's that. Sometimes we just like the sound of it. You know, I spent months trying to convince Mark and Katrina to name their son Dave LaFave because I think it just works so well. And, you know, they didn't, you know, submit to authority there. But I have to say Jacob probably works pretty well, so. But we just like the sound. Sometimes we pick a name because of the meaning. You know, in our case, we were very intentional about trying to pick names that we felt would capture something of what God was saying to our kids. You know, when I was born, I found out the story is, my parents didn't pick a name. Until I was born in the hospital room, my dad picked me up and looked at me at one point and said, yeah, he's a David. I said, okay, so boom, I became a David. David means beloved of God. And that, I didn't know at the time, but that has shaped my understanding. And I think God has used it. I think my dad was prophetic without even knowing it. but we've lost, because we pick names that different way, we've lost that sense of, as a father, I'm establishing identity. Moms and dads are different in this degree. Okay, mom's role in the family, and I want to be careful because this gets overly simplistic every time we talk about that. But studies show that moms have a much bigger influence on their kids, especially in those first couple years. It's not that dads aren't important, don't hear that, it's not black and white either or. But in those first couple years, after that baby has spent 9 months inside mom and then is entering this crazy, loud, bright new world, mom's presence is what brings, more than anything else, security and establishes that child. So in those first 2 years, mom's role is actually bigger and more important in the child's development than dad's is. I'm not saying it's all or nothing, don't hear that, but that's just the reality. But when kids get to adolescence, that switches. When the kids are actually finally stepping away and stepping into adulthood, into this is who I am, and are asking questions like, who am I, why am I here, where am I going, actually the percentages switch and dad's role becomes more important. Dad's role then of saying, this is who you are, becomes critical. And mom can say that, and dad can say that, but the impact on a child is that dad's voice carries more weight. That's just the reality. You know, I remember hearing years ago that no son considers himself a man until his dad says he's a man. You know, now, obviously there's limits to how far you can take that, but there's some truth to that. There's some truth about a dad coming along and saying, son, you're a man. That has an impact that is much beyond his mom coming along and saying, you're a man. It's just different. God has made us different. But dads are the ones who come and affirm that, saying, this is who you are. And dads, more so than anything else, I want to challenge you to embrace that. We're going to talk about how God does that in a second. See, if you don't know who you are, and I think that in our country there's an identity crisis of epic proportions. Most people say, man, I don't really know who I am. I don't really know what I'm about. I might know what the answer is supposed to be, but in my heart of hearts, I'm not so sure. And it's very predictable what happens. One, some people will fall into despair and just give up and just kind of give up on life because they have no purpose, no reason for life. They don't know who they are, where they're going. They just kind of give up. The second response is people will try and prove something. Prove it to themselves. Prove it to the world. I am somebody. And you see that in all kinds of different ways. Sometimes it's in sexual conquest. I'm somebody. See, I can do this. Sometimes it's work performance and rising up. Sometimes it's just this striving sense. Sometimes it's about, you know, putting other people down or to build yourself up. But there's always this dynamic of, if I don't know who I am, I have to prove I'm somebody. I have to prove it to myself. I have to prove it to you. I have to prove it to my dad. I have to prove it to the world. I have to prove it. And I've been there, and it's a very difficult place to be because you can never really do it. You can never really prove you're somebody to yourself. And that's why you see some people who strive and on a worldly level are incredibly successful and incredibly unfulfilled and unhappy. Because underneath it all, there's a sense of, I don't know who I am. And then the third way is to seek it from other people. Seek affirmation. Hope and live in such a way that other people will come and fill that void and say, yeah, you're somebody. This is who you are. You're important. And that can show up by people-pleasing, just trying to make other people happy all the time. Sometimes, especially in young people in high school, it turns into just kind of sexual freedom or immorality, just looking for someone to come and say, hey, you're okay, you're somebody, you're valuable. Sometimes it just shows up by being wishy-washy, kind of going with the flow of whatever will get you accepted or affirmed by whatever group you're in. All of it pretty unhealthy. It's a dad's job to impart identity to their kids in a way that allows them to not have to go there, to not fall into despair, to not have to live life trying to prove something to themselves or somebody else, to not just kind of go with the flow of whatever other people think is best to get approval, to be different. Now let's talk for a minute about how you do that, and I want to talk about how God does it with us. Two of the most important words, dads, that you will ever come out of your mouth towards your kids start with, you are. You are. And dads, one of your jobs is to tell your kids over and over who they are. You are a child of God. You are created by God for a purpose. You are more than a conqueror. You are called to make a difference in the world. You are a Frederick. You are a Wolf. You are whatever. And that means something. I have a friend years ago, and I think I might have shared this before. His name's Keith Criminger. And he sat down and he caught one of his kids at one point telling a little lie. You know, not a big lie. I mean, it was grade school, so it was probably a grade school level lie. He sat down and with his, I think it was a son, I'm not even sure though, and said, you know what? You're a Criminger. Crimmingers don't lie. I heard that and I thought, brilliant. He's saying, this is who you are, and because you're this kind of person, we don't do this. That's beneath us. Not in an arrogant way, not in a proud way, but this is who I am. Think about what you would say. You're a Frederick. We don't do that. You're Frederick. We serve people. What would you say? But fathers, that's part of your job. Now, moms, you can't not, you can't abdicate that. But dads, more than anything else, you need to learn the vocabulary of you are and call out and speak into your kids. See, this is who you are. This is what I see in you. Speak about their specific skills, but and speak about character qualities. You know, one of the things I remember, Anita's dad, we were over there in South Africa, and was out and took Jeshua out fishing. I think it was fishing, teaching him how to fish, which I could not bring to the table. But I remember Opa talking to Jeshua and talking about how he saw perseverance and how important perseverance was and the importance of perseverance. And that was something in our family, you know, coming down that way. And I remember a year later, Jeshua had putting a poster on his wall. He said, this is my favorite verse. And what is it? It's the verse out of James that talks about the importance of perseverance. Because in our family, we persevere. We don't give up. Opa said so. That was grandfather imparting, shaping identity by saying, you're this way. This is important, and you're this way. That's one of the things we bring. Okay? So think about your kids, and it's never too early to start. It especially shows up in adolescence, but it's never too early to start. Think of it this way. If it becomes really important at 15 and you got a one-year-old, you got 14 years to practice getting it right. Learn the vocabulary of you are. You are a Frederick. You're a child of God. You're called by his name. You're called according to a purpose. Okay. Now, just to be really clear, dads, here's the thing you're not allowed to do, which is blow smoke. In other words, if they're not that, you can't say it. My dad never came and said, Dave, you have an amazing musical gift. He had enough integrity to not lie to me that way. So you can't come, and if they come and do a really poor job, say, hey, that's amazing, that's wonderful. You can find something legitimate to affirm, but don't lie in the name of being positive. Now, the other thing you can do, though, is plant seeds. When my friend came and said, you're a criminal, you don't lie, he says, no, son, just lied. Yes, he is. But he was clarifying identity. This is who you are, so this is how we live. And when you're talking about character, you constantly call your sons and daughters up to step into being the kind of men and women God's called them to be. That's your job more than anything else you'll do. And there's a lot of other stuff to do. I'm not saying there's not. But to be that voice, really to be God's voice to your sons and daughters. Okay? Now, if you're not a dad, maybe you're here, you're a mom, maybe you're not a mom. Maybe you're a young man or young woman who's not a single mom or single or anything. Take a minute to think about your folks, your dad. What did he say? Who did he say you are? Did he say anything? Did he send you a message? I mean, you know, I want to honor my dad. He sent me mixed messages. There were times that he said, boy, that was really good. Other times, if I screw up, the line in our family was, man, if you had a brain, you'd be dangerous. I grew up wanting to be dangerous. Because I wanted to live up to what my dad said. Now, I wasn't consciously doing that, but that certainly had an effect on shaping my thinking. You know? Sometimes led me into some bad decisions. I discovered, by the way, if you want to prove yourself in high school, the way to do it is not to challenge the state champion wrestler to a fight. It's not a good thing. A friend did that, not, you know. When we do that, we're being God's voice to our kids. Jesus started his ministry that way. If you look in Luke chapter 3, verses 21 through 22, when Jesus started his ministry, before he ever started, before he did one sermon, before he healed one sick person, before he did anything, This was his experience. He gets baptized. He's praying. Heaven's open. The Holy Spirit descends on him. And a voice came from heaven saying, gosh, look at that. You are. You are my son whom I love. With you I am well pleased. Now, notice this for a minute. This is God speaking to Jesus, and what he's not doing is speaking to the rest of the world about him. He's not saying, hey, world, pay attention, the Savior's here. That's not what he did. He starts out speaking to his son, establishing his identity. You are my son. I love you. I am pleased with you. And everything Jesus did after that flowed out of that. His identity was, I think, established in that moment. And if you look at the rest of his life, he was not thrown by other people's questions, right? The devil and others came and said, so, if you're the Son of God, da-da-da. And he basically said, yeah, I am. I don't have to prove it. And people were always saying, you know, well, if you're this, if you're that, who do you say I am? Who do you? And there was this constant question of his identity. Jesus never questioned it because he'd heard his father say, you are my son. I want to suggest for you and I, the single most important voice you will ever hear is God, your father, saying, you are my son or you are my daughter, and embracing that. That shapes your life. Learning, understanding sonship, daughtership. You guys, if you want to be a good father, first just learn to be a good son. Get a revelation of what it means to be God's son in your life. He was completely free to serve. He didn't have to impress everyone. If you remember in John 13, Jesus comes, it's the Last Supper, and he takes the servant's role. He gets a towel, comes around, and he washes the disciples' feet, which were dirty from walking in dusty roads and muddy roads and things like that. That was the lowest place. It says Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, that he had come from God and was returning to God. And it goes on to say, so he was able to take the lowest place and wash their feet. Because knowing who he was, he didn't have to impress anybody. You know, if you want to impress someone, the way to do it is not to take the lowest rung, take the dirtiest, ugliest job that no one else wants, the one that everybody else says, well, only a loser would do that. You say, yeah, it's okay, I'll do it. You got to be pretty secure in who you are to not care what anyone else says about you. Well, Jesus seemed to be pretty secure. You know, one of the traps in church life is that when we minister to other people, we do it in a way to make ourselves look good. We minister for acceptance. We want people to say, man, you're really wise, you're really caring, you're a great servant, and we're in a subtle way looking for approval. It's a trap for pastors, I'll tell you. And we're ministering for acceptance, for affirmation, instead of out of it. Ministering out of acceptance. When I know I'm accepted, when I know who I am, and I'm free to just give, I'm free to share, I can bless you, I can affirm you, I can make you look good because it doesn't threaten me. I can build other people up because it doesn't change who I am. You have to have a core sense of identity of knowing this is who I am in order to get there. Jesus had that. And I think in the same way that God the Father gave that to him, that as fathers we're supposed to impart that to our kids, I actually think that the single most important thing you can come to grips with after just giving your life to Christ, having a relationship with him, is settling this thing in your heart. And I think it comes from God. You can't just wake up and decide to do it. It comes from interacting with God, of settling, this is who I am. This is who I am in Christ. This is who God says I am. So let me just ask you to think for a minute. And you might want to actually take your bulletin and write this down, although you don't need to show it to anybody. You can keep it quite private. But ask yourself this. What's your name? I don't mean your legal name. What's the name that in your secret times that you really would call yourself? how you would describe yourself. If someone said, tell me who you are in a word, what word would you use? Maybe it would be something like successful, achiever, more than a conqueror. Now, by the way, I'm asking you not what you think it should be, but what is it? Because the reality is, as we go through life, we get named by a lot of people. We get named by our dad. We get named by our parents. We get named by friends, by bosses, by teachers. And some of those names take root in our heart and begin to shape our identity. I'm asking you, what are those names? And maybe there's one that trumps others. Maybe it changes at different seasons. But what is it right now? Maybe it's average. Maybe it's choker. Choker is someone who under pressure just can't step up and they screw up. When the pressure's on, they always get it wrong. They fall down, they don't step up. Maybe it's screw up. If I looked back, I try to think about the names I had in college. You know, the name I had that I gave myself was boring. I looked around, I had some really creative, really talented friends. I look around, I thought, man, I am really boring. Now, if the way you name yourself is boring, how many creative risks do you take? In case you don't know, zero. Because you know, that's not who I am. So I'm not going to try. I have a friend who was told by a teacher once that they were the most talented underachiever they'd ever seen. They were the biggest waste of amazing talent. And that took root. Maybe that word is for you is leader. You understand? Hey, I'm a leader. For some, it's fraud. See, deep down you say, I'm a fraud. I know everybody else thinks I'm this and I'm all these wonderful things, but the truth is, I'm this. And of course, if your word is fraud, then you live in fear of being exposed and people see who you really are. But what's your name? And chances are you might have more than one. But I want you to go past that, because what happens if you start to think about this and engage with this kind of thinking, you'll come up with a whole long list right away. Like, oh, I this, and some are positive, some are negative. But if you press into that a little bit, you'll usually find that there's one or two that really at the deepest level, man, this is really it. This is really who I think I am. And one of the reasons that's so important is you will never really live differently than that name. If your name is talented underachiever, you will never rise to the heights you could, because you'll sabotage yourself, because you're always going to live consistent with who do you really think you are. So write it down. Is it positive or negative? Now I want you to write down one other thing, if you are writing, for the five of you who are taking me seriously. And that's this. If God was writing, what would he say? What name would he put on you? And I want to even ask you to go a step beyond writing down son or daughter. I think that is the most important one, and if you get that, it will shape your life. But go beyond. What would God name you? If he had to write a name tag and slap it on you, and it wasn't just your legal name, and it wasn't son or daughter, who would he say you are? And I know for some of you, you're going, I have no idea. I don't even know how to think about that. Well, let me tell you, you're at a wonderful place, because you can give God a blank slate and say, God, write my name. Tell me who I am. Tell me who you say I am. Because here's probably the best news of all on this Father's Day. One of the things we see throughout Scripture is that God is in the name-changing business. Over and over in Scripture, I'll show you a couple examples. God will come to people and say, you know what? This used to be your name. Now it's this. So, for example, with Abram in Genesis 17:5, the father of faith, his name is Abram. God comes, and after creating a covenant with him, bring him into a special relationship with him, telling him, this is your destiny. You're going to have as many descendants as there are sand on the seashore and stars in the sky. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham, for I've made you a father of many nations. Now, by the way, Abram meant exalted father. Abraham means father of many nations. I read that first, and I thought, well, that's not that big a difference. But one of the things you need to understand is the difference between there is that little ha, or the aha, or the ah. It's the ah. I work on my spelling here, okay, you know. What God did with Abraham's name, when he changed it from Abram to Abraham, God's name biblically was Yahweh. God took part of the character of his name and inserted it into the center of Abraham's name. In going from Abram to Abraham, God was saying, your identity is no longer just you. I am actually putting me in the center of you. That's where the ah comes from. It comes from the Yahweh. So it wasn't just a cooler title. Ooh, exalted father, father of many. That was an identity change. God inserting part of his name into Abraham's name, changing his identity. Affirming his connection, his calling from God, his purpose. It wasn't just, oh, here, let's add a couple letters and change the title. God was changing his name in accordance with who God said he was. It wasn't just a cool name. It was God says, this is who I say you are, so I'm changing your name. Jesus did the same thing with Peter. If you remember in Matthew 16, Jesus is asking his disciples, he says, so who do you guys say I am? And they come up with different ideas, and Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this wasn't revealed to you by man, my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. The word in Greek, I'm not going to get into the actual Greek words, but there's a little play on words that are going on. And Simon, actually, the Greek word that comes from that refers to a rock, but it's the rock that if you saw a ledge, like you're up in the mountains and you saw a ledge sticking out, and a little piece of that ledge broke off, kind of like a little piece of stone that just wasn't as strong and kind of was, that was where the word Simon came from. It was that little piece of rock that had gotten broken off and was just kind of there, like not really a pebble, but not like a big thing. Peter, the word Peter, rock, refers to a massive rock, like stone. It would almost be the ledge. And Jesus comes to him and says, you know what? You're not this guy, this little kind of vulnerable guy who got broken off because you weren't strong enough to stay connected. You are Peter, the rock, and on this rock, I'm going to build my whole church. Do you think that changed Peter's idea of who he was? I mean, if you grew up being called, hey, little pebble, and Jesus says, no, you're a rock, you go, ah. I'm sure Peter didn't because he was such a humble, godly man, but I would have. I would have been going, did you hear what Jesus said? Just, you know, just checking. I just want to make sure everybody, you know, no one missed out on the fact that I'm the rock. He was changing his identity. You know, same thing I'll refer once more in general in Galatians 4. Excuse me. Will you put that up there? Paul's writing to them. He says, by the way, you're no longer a slave. He's writing to Christians who had this idea in part that being a Christian, I've given my life to God, now I am a slave of God, I live for him. Now, there's some truth to that, but Paul was coming and saying, you know what, you're thinking wrong. Not that you're not called to obedience and to live for God, but God's saying, you know what, you're not a slave anymore, you're a son. And a son, God has also made you an heir. And he goes through and actually says that one of the reasons Jesus died was that so that we might receive the full rights of sons. Sons got to take over their father's estate. If you're a firstborn son, you got a double portion of his inheritance. Everything the Father had was yours. And Jesus comes, Paul comes and says, you know what, Jesus died so that you would have the full rights of son, so that everything that God has becomes yours because you're a son. You have access to everything he has, to wisdom, to power, to connection, to purpose, to all those things. To having your sins forgiven, wiped away, new family, everything you can think of, all the privileges of sons, he's got, Paul's saying, that's what, you're not called this anymore, you are this. Your name has been changed from just being a son or a servant, to being a slave or a servant. And that sounds very humble. In church, we like humble things. We like people to say, man, I'm just a servant. I honestly got to confess, you guys, some of you, I hate it when you come and say, I'm just a servant. I know that, but you know what? The mindset behind that, yes, we're called to serve, but where do you get the idea of just a servant? I am a son who's willing to wash someone else's feet. I'm not a servant by nature. I am a son with royal blood in my veins because of what Jesus did for me. And because of that, I'm free to serve, I'm free to help, I'm free to take the smallest, least important task, because that no longer defines me. And what God says, I want you to have the full rights of sons. And by the way, a little earlier, this applies to sons and daughters. Daughters are part of the mix. Daughters, you also get the full rights of sons. I know in our mindset, in our 20th century mindset, that sounds a little bit weird. But what you got to understand is the point is that God has opened the door for you to have full access to everything God has because you have a new identity. He has changed your name. And part of, I think, our journey as followers of Christ is learning how to walk into the fullness of that day by day more and more and more. To learn how to step into who God has made us to be, to take hold of what he has provided for us. In some ways, that's our journey. For some of you this morning, as we go into worship, I want to encourage you, if you wrote that down or if you didn't write it down, but you just put, and you know what your name is, you know what your parents or your father or your mother named you or your teachers named you or the world has named you or maybe you named you when you looked in the mirror and on a bad day went, oh man, you're just a da-da-da-da. To bring that before the Lord during worship and say, as you're worshiping God, saying, God, you know what? Is this my name? Is this the name you've given me, God? Or is there a different name? God, who do you say I am? Who do you say I am, God? Let's have the worship team come on up. I want to end. I'm just going to read a passage here. This is out of Isaiah 62. And God, by the prophet Isaiah, is speaking to the nation of Israel, who has gone through some tough times and been in exile and been beaten down and all kinds of things. And he comes and says this. You will be a crown of splendor in the Lord's hand, a royal diadem in the hand of your God. No longer will they call you deserted or name your land desolate. For you will be called Hephzibah, which literally means my delight is in her, and your land Beulah, meaning married. For the Lord will take delight in you, and your land will be married. And he's coming to a people who are feeling defeated, who are feeling lost, who have lost in battle, who have been conquered by other countries, who have been beaten down by life. And saying, I understand you feel abandoned. I understand you feel alone. I understand that you feel like this has been a tough go. But I am changing your name. No longer are you going to be called deserted. That's not my name for you. My name for you is married. No longer are you going to be called abandoned and beaten up. My name for you is conqueror and winner and more than a conqueror. And I think for some of us this morning, what God wants to do is begin or continue the process of changing your name. And that starts on our end with us being honest about the name. Being honest about saying, God, this is what I call myself. This is what others have. And bring it before the Lord and saying, Lord, what's your name for me? Because I can pretty much guarantee you it's going to be different.
This has been a DuPage Vineyard Church production.